Welcome to this week's Big Boat interview with me, Charlotte Hogarth-Jones. This week, I spoke with Dean Pilati, the captain on board 60.9-metre Ariance. I caught up with Dean while he was managing to grab a rare trip home to see family in Australia, and we had a fascinating chat, especially about social media and how you can use that to really sell your charter yacht, as he and his team have done very successfully. Keep listening to hear all his top tips, as well as some valuable lessons learned about boats and how to run them, gathered over many years in the business. So first up, Dean, where in the world are you and what are you doing there?
Well, right now I'm sitting in my hotel room overlooking the ocean, setting here in Perth, WA. I've finally managed after COVID to get back to see my family and my kids after a couple of years being locked out.
God.
I rotated off the boat about a week ago. So yeah, here having a little bit of downtime.
Yeah, God, that must be anyone who listens to the podcast regularly will know Stuart, our editor, did something similar a couple of weeks back, because particularly getting out there has been really tough. You must be enjoying being at home.
Yeah, absolutely. It's good. Well, Manchester's home now, but yeah, just getting back to see the kids and the parents is everything that, you know, you do. You get so wrapped up in trying to get out the yachting life, and then you think you're going, and then the government changes the rules and you have to cancel. So I'm just glad to be here.
Yeah, I bet. Well, thanks for making the time in the middle of your holidays.
No problem.
Well, I thought we'd start off, actually, I have added an extra question, because your yacht, Ariance, the yacht that you're captain of currently, can you tell us how she got her name first? Because that's quite interesting.
Yeah, sure. So we have an owner that is very much into philosophy and art. And he took the name art and science and mixed the two together and got Ariance. So dropped the T off of the art and the other bit and put it together. And yeah, that's how we ended up with Ariance. So yeah, that's where the name came about from.
Fantastic. And has he... Have you done any kind of scientific research or anything on board, or is that something that might happen in the future maybe?
No, not really. It's just, you know, with his philosophy of life and stuff like that, and, you know, the way he sits with his work and stuff like that. So, yeah, no real science involved in regards to, you know, seeing the world or doing research, but, yeah, just the way he foresees himself and his outlook on life. It's great.
Fantastic. Well, I thought we'd start off. Why don't you tell us a bit about the boat? Because having a look at it, it looks like there are some incredible features on board. So talk us through it.
Yeah, well, Ariance is a great boat. It's a Abeking and Rasmussen. It's 60 metres long, but she's super volume. So we've got about the same volume as about a 70 to 75 metre.
Right.
We're 1,642 gross tonnes. So it's a big boat for a 60 metre. In fact, it was built to be the biggest boat in St. Barts, which is allowed to be on the dock,
right?
Stern 2 in St. Barts. We have a unique feature that we can put one of our stabilizers out, because we take that very end berth in St. Barts for New Year's Eve usually, and we all know how bad it can get in there, but we can put one fin out and run that in the marina, and to keep us a little bit more under control when we all know how bad it gets in St. Barts on New Year's Eve pretty much every year. So, yeah, in regards to that, it's super big cabins. We sleep 14 and great volume on the interior. The cabins, the guest cabins are super good. The guest areas are great. And, you know, we've just got all the sports toys and stuff that makes a charter, really. It's been a charter boat before us, and then we took over the boat and, you know, managed to develop it into a development machine. But, you know, that comes from the team that's around us, I guess, that helps us get there.
And how long have you been on board her now?
I've been on board since the owner bought her. So we got her in April of 2019.
Right. And did you bring a team with you at all, or did you, were there other people that he brought with him, or?
No. So when I got the boat, I said to the boss, I had an interview on board the boat, actually, when he was doing the purchase sea trial. I asked him if I could have 1 year of carte blanche to run the boat and do it my way, because I wanted to have a different approach, and my approach was social media. And back in 2019, I asked him if he would give me some latitude, and this is what I wanted to do. He really liked what I was putting forward, said that I wanted to build a team around the boat and around it. And if not, after that year, we would go to a management company, and we haven't done that. It worked, basically. And I've built the team since 2019. I didn't have rotation then, so it was myself on my own, double season charter boat. And, you know, that first year we did really well with the crew awards with A crew, and we had a pretty full summer. We did about 12 weeks that first year. So, yeah, it's been super busy from the outset.
Mm. And when you're talking about, you know, you had this idea to kind of focus on social media, does that mean a lot of the crew have kind of dual skills in terms of making video and stuff like that? Or is it all sort of spearheaded by you?
No, I think we definitely started off in the right direction. Like, I definitely didn't have a social media following in the first instance. But I went out and got a gentleman called Jared Watney as the deckhand, who, you know, most people within the yachting would know. And also I started following a chef a few years before that called Deed Harrison. And I liked his skill set and the way he worked. Never tasted his food, but I was basically went to Palmer, rang his doorbell, said, "This is what I'm doing. This is what my boss has asked me to do, and I'd like you to come and work for me." So with Dean Harrison, who's called the yacht chef, and Jared Watney, you know, we basically told him what we were going to do and what I wanted to create. And yeah, it's snowballed from that, really. And with those two guys and myself, we really, you know, pushed hard to, the boss wanted us to be best in class in that first, within the first year. And that was his milestone or his checkpoint in regards to where we stood. And We did really well, and Jared won awards at A crew. Dean won awards at A crew that year. I won awards. The boat won awards. So yeah, I think we pretty much fulfilled the requirement.
That's it's interesting. You mentioned the yacht chef. I think we've just interviewed him for a big piece we have coming up about kind of provisioning on board and kind of more modern methods. So that's interesting. But next, I want to sort of ask you, do you have a very busy charter season ahead? And if you do, how much of that do you attribute to the market right now? And how much do you think is your kind of social media approach being very visible and proactive on that platform?
That's a great question, because you never really know where social media lands. So I think the market is buoyant in its own right at the moment. I think COVID has helped. I'm sure we'll come back to the COVID part of it in a later question, but I think COVID has helped the charter industry in a certain way. The social media thing, it's interesting. In 2020, we picked up some guests in Naples, and we picked up the principal, his children, and the grandchildren. And in the car on the way back, one of the grandkids said to me, "Captain, can I ask you a question?" And I said, "Sure, you can." She said, "When are we having the crayfish for dinner?" And I said, "How do you know we've got crayfish?" She goes, "We all follow you on social media." And I thought, and that was sort of like a light bulb moment. We're not going to get the principals watching us on social media, but what we will get are either the children or the grandchildren.
Yeah.
And then that leads them asking granddad to rent that boat. Because that's the boat we want to be on.
Yeah.
And it was a light bulb moment for us, I think. And, you know, we've moved from that. You know, you just never know who is watching you.
Yeah. It's interesting that you mentioned kind of the impact of children on things, because when I was at Winch the other day, they were saying, you know, one of the impacts they've seen of the pandemic is having way more kind of multi-generational families taking out charters. So it is the grandparents, the parents, the grandkids, the friends of the grandkids. So it's quite interesting to think actually the people driving the bookings might be the teenagers that can see the amazing inflatable toys and the incredible food and the fun stuff on board, rather than the person actually booking and paying for it. So that's quite an interesting take.
Yeah, 100%. And I think, you know, it's like you never know who you're talking to in this industry. You know, the wealthiest people can be in the daggiest shorts and the worst T-shirt, but you just never know who they are.
And looking at other yachts that kind of, or owners that sort of try and make their yacht visible on social media and aren't really successful, what do you think people do wrong?
I think, well, one of the things that we do, let me talk about what we do to make it successful rather than what others do. So we never post the week that we have the charter on board. So let's say you came on board out and we're in Saint-Tropez. Well, we wouldn't post that we're in Saint-Tropez that week because for obvious reasons, because if we have an A-list celebrity on board or whatever like that, we don't want people to know where we are. Okay, there's other ways to always know where the boat is. But let's just say we had an A-list celebrity, we posted that they're on board. Well, then we get hounded by the media and everyone else that follows us or whatever. So we always tend to post a week behind where we actually are. That's just for our own security and also to protect the clients.
And do the clients know? Are they okay with it? Or are there some people that say, look, we don't want any coverage of this trip, and you say, okay, that's fine?
Yes. So we say very quickly in our briefings that we are a social media boat. We never, ever have photos or video of their faces. If there's a snapshot, it might be at sunset, they're in a silhouette, you can't say who they are. We would show them, they would sign off on it. But we tend not, you know, we do not use guests in profiles. It's usually, you know, behind the scenes which creates the interest, not necessarily the stars that you have on board.
That's interesting. It's the kind of below deck effect, isn't it? That people want to see kind of behind the curtain.
Yeah, for sure. You're right with that.
And does that make your job more difficult sometimes? Is it a kind of extra element that you're constantly thinking of? How's this going to photograph? How's this going to work?
It is indeed. And, you know, we say to crew, okay, this is what we're doing and this is what we're trying to achieve with our social media and the presence that we have in social media for the boat. But then when I text a crew member to say, you need to take that down, they're like, oh, wait a second. We're trying to promote, and I'm like, yes, but that's not in the keeping of what RNX is trying to do. So you need to take it down.
It's such a difficult line, isn't it?
It is a fine line. Yeah. It is a very fine line between what's right and what's not. But it's more about how it's perceived, not necessarily the message that it's giving.
Yeah, it's interesting. Having worked with lots of, interviewed and been in touch with lots of people like videographers and people whose kind of livelihood is stuff, you know, doing social media and creating footage on board, I think they find it quite difficult sometimes because, you know, people they've worked for will say, we don't want any of that online. And they're saying, well, that's kind of my calling card. That's how I get my next job, is to kind of show what I've done. So it's so hard to navigate kind of what people are comfortable with versus, you know, what you're able to put out there. But let's talk about destinations for a bit. Where are you kind of, when are you back on the boat and where are you off to next?
I start the 1st of July is my first day back on board, and I'm picking the boat back up in Croatia, and it's pretty much full on July and August. We're fully booked right through, some 24-hour turnarounds, some couple of day turnarounds. So we're starting in Croatia, then we're heading down to Malta. Got some stuff around the south side of Italy, Sicily, back up to the French Riviera, then back down to Italy, and then back into Croatia. So pretty much the milk run as such.
But such great such great places to go. I wondered, of all the places you've traveled to, both on Ariens and sort of former yachts, are there any destinations that you find either sort of really that's the way to put it. So sort of people don't know about it and you think it could be an incredible destination if only a few changes were made? Or are there any places where you think, God, I hate going there, that's always a pain, I don't know why everyone likes going there because of X, Y, Z?
Capri.
Really?
I can't. Everyone wants to go to Capri and I can't stand it.
Why is that?
Because you're either in the wind or in the swell. And if you're not in the swell, you're in boat chop where, trying to get guests on and off tenders for them to go to restaurants and stuff. And the boat's moving, 1 or 2 meters up and down because of all the boats screaming around, getting guests. And, the island's beautiful. And yes, there's beautiful restaurants, but I just don't see the absolute must be there. And you sit there and it's windy or rough all the time.
Yeah, that's interesting. Really interesting. And in terms of places that you think, you know, why don't more owners come here?
Croatia. I love it. Oh my God.
It's yeah, just I love Croatia.
Stern to the rocks in a little bay on your own. Not see the bottom, you know, turn the lights on at night, fish swimming around you in the lights. Wake up in the morning, there's like just crystal clear blue water and on your own. You know, we go into a little bay, tie up to the rocks, we're on our own. You know, but, you know, some people don't like that. Some people want to be in Capri with everyone else, you know.
Yeah.
20 meters away listening to everyone else's music on the boats. But, you know, and that's why chartering's so interesting, because you don't know what you're going to get up to when you wake up in the morning.
Yeah, I guess it's very much driven by the guests.
You know, every day is different, and that's what drives us, I think, to keep going and keep getting up and doing your 15-hour days and then go to bed and get up the next morning, because you don't know what the day's going to bring.
Definitely.
That's the challenge of it.
And in Croatia, I interviewed an owner a while back who told me so many, I mean, very funny stories, but lots of stories about kind of corruption in Croatia and bribery from the port officials and things. Is that anything you've come up against, or have you found it fairly straightforward there?
No, for me, it's pretty straightforward. I'm pretty loyal to my agents and brokers that I use. And once I have them, they're mine until they mess up or they do something that's not, you know, appropriate for the boat. And if so, then it's their own fault and they lose something that's a good wicket. So I tend not to worry about that too much.
Okay. And I did wonder, you know, on the vein of kind of funny stories, having been a captain for so many years, I wondered if you had any kind of funny stories or anecdotes or, you know, crazy things that had happened over your time on board. We've had everything in the past from kind of pirates to things happening at customs to, you know, we even had something the other day about someone discovering a whole charter boat of topless crew. You know, all sorts of things happen. I wondered if you had any anecdotes. I can see, as I'm watching you, I can see that you're filtering them out in your mind.
Yeah,
you're trying
to
work out which ones are appropriate and which ones
aren't. Yeah, which ones I can. So, okay, we were in Croatia, and everybody knows that when you come into Croatia, you need to go to Dubrovnik to check in. So we'd been in Tivat in Montenegro. We'd left with this charter guest on board, and we were coming into Dubrovnik to clear in. And I had the pilot on board, and we're backing up, and he was about to put us on the customs dock, which is, I don't know if you've ever been there, but it's right at the end. It's quite some walking from the office. Anyway, so I said to the pilot, can you just check and see if we can park right out the front of the office? And he goes, no one's allowed to park out. I said, but can you just check for me? So he calls up on the radio, and sure enough, we get clearance. So I keep backing the boat up, and the pilot looks at me, and he looks at me and he goes, who do you have on board? That's armed security. And I just looked at him and smiled and said, I'm not really sure what you mean, and kept driving the boat back, and we parked right at the front door. You know, so little things like that, because even for the pilot that does that every day,
yeah,
you know, and knows that boats aren't allowed there, but because of the people that we have on board, you know,
suddenly
you're allowed to do anything because you ask.
Yeah.
And then he gets told to let that happen. So, yeah. You know, it is those sorts of things make you smile, because it doesn't happen all the time.
Yeah. And have you ever had any particularly difficult guests, or do you think you've had a pretty good run of it?
No, I think, look, you have your own challenges with every sort of charter guest. And again, I go back to my thing that I said earlier. It's what makes it interesting.
Mm.
What I will say is it's not normally the guest that's the problem. It's the entourage.
Right.
It's never really the main principal that comes on board that, if he has a big entourage, that's the problem. It's the dressers or the PAs or the photographers or the videographers that travel with them that are, because they become entitled.
Yeah.
And they think that they have the run of the boat. which is always quite amusing.
Yeah, it's interesting having interviewed a number of kind of big sort of big name celebrities on and off land. Like sometimes the people that are supposed to be representing them or protecting them are so demanding and difficult. And then when you meet the person themselves who's been bigged up in your mind to be this incredible diva with all these wants and needs, and they're so down to earth, and you think, God, I wonder if you realize the people that are, you know, sort of acting as your ambassador, you know, I wonder if you realize how they come across, because I'm sure that some of them have no idea the things that they say they don't like or they won't accept. Actually, you know, when you meet them, they say, no, I'll eat any color M&Ms, I don't mind, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
Different world. So let's talk a bit about your sort of previous experience as a captain and how you got into all this. Kind of when did you start? What brought you into yachting? All the rest of it.
Okay. So in 1991, I packed my backpack, said goodbye to my mum and dad from Perth, and said, I'm going to go. I was 21. Said, I'm going to go and travel around Europe, do the Australian backpacking thing. And I never came home, really. Just to cut that bit short, I basically traveled around Greece, Italy, France, got to the south of France, walked out onto the Croisette there and saw the yachts, and my jaw just dropped, and went, yep, this is what I want to do. And I started at the bottom, basically, as a day worker, worked my way up. 2001, I got my master's ticket, and yeah, and I basically have been a captain ever since then. So, you know, really worked my way through the system. I started in the Australian system and then realized that I was better off going back to the MCA system. So I swapped over to that. And yeah, so 2001 got my 3,000 ton ticket and pretty much have been doing it ever since.
And did you get your first job by kind of dock walking and the typical route, or how did you get your kind of first break?
Yeah, I started walking the docks. I started looking for my first job in September of 91, which was not a good time, as we know, in being in the Mediterranean summer. That's pretty much when the boats start to wind down. I was a sailor back in Australia. I used to race sailing boats and stuff like that, and I started on a sailing boat. So hand on heart, my love is sailing, and that's where I started. And I started on a classic sailing boat called Gitana 4, and worked my way up from there. And then after about 3 years of being on that boat, I got offered a job as a chief officer on a 40 meter to close out the summer motorboat. And then at the end of that summer, the boat went back to CRN in Italy and for a paint job, which I went with the boat then. And in the dry dock next door, there was a brand new 50 meter being built. And I met the captain, the build captain, and then that moved me onto that 50 meter. And I stayed on that boat for 7 years. And then from there, I got my master's ticket. And then, yeah, started back at 35 meter range and worked my way up to the bigger ones now, where I am now at 60 meters.
Amazing. It sounds like a very fast progression, really. Are there any of the yachts you can kind of name from your past, or are they all, you know, is that all under wraps?
No. So I'm on Ariens now. So before that, I was on Jaguar, a motor yacht Jaguar, which was a Benetti 50 meter, which I was on that for 13 years. Before that, I was on Faladan, which was a 35 meter. That was the first boat that I got a captain's job on. And that was charter as well. That was a super busy charter boat. And yeah, and then back to Gitana 4. So I've only been on four boats since I've...
Yeah, you've had quite long stints compared to the kind of average of hopping about. Yeah, why absolutely. Do you think that is?
I don't know. I think I find a good rapport with owners and get into a zone where I'm comfortable in the position and get a good team of people around me. And, you know, when I left Jaguar to come to Ariens and start something new, you know, three of those crew are now with me now. My chief engineer was with me on Jaguar. He's been with me for nearly 10 years. What my senior chief stewardess, she's been with me for 6 years. my other rotational captain, he used to be my chief mate when he was on Jaguar. So, yeah, you know, I guess I get the right sort of people around me and they seem to like how I run things, or the feeling that we have on board. You know, it's about a family. That's what makes a good charter boat. It's the family that we have around us that creates the vibe. You know, one of my mantras is your vibe creates your tribe, you know, so.
So I guess you attract like people.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and I think that goes for us all the way around. You know, we have an amazing team with Cecil Wright that do our central agency for Ariens. When you want to charter her, we have to go through them, because I'm sure you know that all charter boats have to have a central agent. So we have, we use Cecil Wright, and, you know, we have an amazing team, and I do all the contract negotiations with them directly. And then when I think it's right, we send it to the principal to be signed off. And Liz and I have an amazing working relationship, and it's awesome. So it just makes it easy.
Yeah. And has anyone ever given you any really great advice throughout your career? Is there anything that you think back on and you think, God, they were right about that?
Oh, that's a great question. We'll come back to it. Let me think on
that. All right. Well, you mentioned, you know, you were talking about overseeing the paint job, and obviously there's lots of owners kind of either buying boats at the moment or doing refits and things. What's your advice to kind of new owners coming into the market who want to buy a boat? There are obviously some people out there trying to capitalize on that in not such a scrupulous way. Kind of what would you advise someone who is quite fresh to the market?
I just have a clear vision on what you want the boat to do, and understand what you want from the boat. And if you want the boat to charter, then because you need that income to offset the boat, then my owner definitely doesn't need it, but he likes the boat chartering. So if he's got holidays booked on the boat and he says, okay, I am coming on board, and then I ring him and say, listen, we've got a 10-day option. This is the price of what they're all. He goes, yep, and just steps aside and lets them come on board. But if you do that and then go, oh, no, I want it for me, well, then don't get upset at the end when, you know, you have to dip into your own pocket to balance out the books because you've given up charter days for yourself.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
You know, just have a clear understanding of what you want to get out of the boat. Why do you have it? Do you want it for a safe place?
What do you think the secret is to having a successful charter boat? Because it obviously, particularly now, it's a really competitive market.
Crew.
Yeah. That's interesting.
So you can sell an average boat with an amazing crew, but you can't sell the best boat in the world with an average crew.
That's really interesting.
And you know, I would stand by that day in, day out. And I think most captains would agree that it's what makes the boat so successful is the feeling that people get as soon as they walk on board. They need to feel like it's their home from the very first minute they step on board.
Yeah, that rings very true. And it's something that lots of people kind of say about their own yachts, either that they're really struggling to get the right crew or that they think the crew is kind of what makes the difference. So it's interesting to hear your take on it.
Because you feel it. It's the vibe. As soon as you walk on board a boat, if the vibe's off, the guests feel it. From the very second you walk on, just the energy's not right.
Yeah, you can kind of feel the tension. And how do you feel about the state of the yacht market at the moment? Obviously, we've got loads of new buyers. There's charter bookings are absolutely chock-a-lite. How long do you think that will continue for? Or do you think it will continue indefinitely? Is it something you worry about? What are your thoughts?
I think it's going to continue to stay in a relatively buoyant status at the moment. There's not a lot of good boats out there right now, especially all the big boys that have been out there at the moment for the current world circumstances have either run away to hide or are being parked up at the moment. So, you know, I think it's quite a buoyant place. You know, COVID definitely helped the charter industry for obvious reasons, because people realized that it created a safe place for them to be, for their family and their children and stuff. So yeah, I think it'll continue to stay buoyant. We definitely are, and you know, it's a good place for us at the moment. So yeah, I definitely think it'll stay buoyant.
And talking a bit about Australia for a second, because obviously Stuart was out there recently and he met some, you know, some great owners out there, and there are some great boats, and you know, it's an interesting area for me. Do you see more owners in that part of the world, or do you think anything needs to be done to attract more owners there?
I think the world needs to be a little bit more prepared for yacht crew to make it work. So the one of the interesting things, other than the distance, like how long it takes to get down here, you know, it's a long way.
Because that's quite
way.
A big factor.
Yeah, yeah, it's a huge factor. Now, whether an owner or a principal commits to coming down this far and then doing a whole lot through Asia or, you know, that part of the world, well, then, yeah, that's a great place to come. But, you know, there's a lot of Antipodeans or Australians and New Zealanders within the industry. But if we come back to Australia, you know, it changes our residential status as well. So, you know, a lot of boats say, oh, we're going to head down to Australia. And then a lot of crew leave because it changes their status and they're no longer being allowed, you know, because they're in Australia for too many days. So, you know, it is a long way to come and it is a limited part, you know, of things to do in Australia. Okay, there's Sydney and then there's the Great Barrier Reef and then, okay, you can go across to New Zealand. But, yeah, it's a long way to come for not – that's why the Mediterranean's so popular, because there's so many different cultures within, you know, a week's sailing.
Yeah.
But it takes 2 months to get from Monaco to here.
Sydney. I know.
You know, it's a long, long way and a lot of money in fuel, especially at this time of the year with the fuel at its costings at the moment.
Yeah, I get that. And then probably, you know, almost the last question, I just wondered, you know, as someone who sees a lot of boats and hears a lot of firsthand experience from other captains about what works and what doesn't, if you had unlimited budget, I'm saying, Dean, you know, take this bank account, buy yourself a brand new yacht. It can be the most cutting edge. It can be a classic. You know, what are you going to go for and why?
Well, it would be a Northern European boat. And volume. I don't think necessarily length is always important, because that also restricts you getting into those nice little bays and going stern to the rocks and stuff. But volume is what matters. And also the beach access, or for water sports and swimming, and, you know, that the ability to be in the sun or not in the sun. But, you know, we're a family orientated boat. That's another great thing about Ariens. We heavily promote children on board the boat, because happy kids are happy mum and dads. So, you know, you have the right thing to go with toys and water sports and stuff like that. So if you continue to do that, it makes the family happy. So I reckon about 80 meters is about the perfect size boat, but big volume 80 meter, so that you're probably looking at the same as a 90 meter boat in size, and then just great beach access, water sports and toys, and you know, that'd be a winning concept right there.
Okay, it's on your Christmas list.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, thanks so much for talking to me, Dean. It's been really interesting, especially all the social media stuff you were saying earlier. It's really interesting to get a kind of insider's perspective on what it's like to put all that together.
There is a downside to that too, interesting enough, because obviously Chef Dean has moved on. The yacht chef's moved on from us now because he's chasing his own bits and pieces, which I'm sure he's probably talked to you about. But when he was applying for some jobs, they come back to him and go, no, you're too social for us. Which,
yeah, I definitely have heard that before.
You know, that there is a definite caveat to being on boats that, you know, but also I think owners also need to understand too that yacht crew wear many different hats, especially captains. And you need to give them the ability to change the hat. You know, I remember once I went for an interview and one of the owner's representatives said, oh, you're a little bit too Australian for me. And so
that's awful.
Yeah, but
what do you think they even meant by that?
Yeah, no, but it's interesting. So I went okay, and then left, and then sitting, and I was driving from Monaco back to Barcelona, and I sat on that question for quite a few hours. And then I actually rang him back and said, you know, what did you mean by I'm too Australian? And he goes, oh, you know, a little bit casual. And I went, but that's a little bit unfair. I said, I've been on charter boats where it's yes, sir, no, sir. And I've been on charter boats where you address the owner or the principal by the first name. I said, I'm a captain. I'm a professional in the industry that I work. So I wear the cap that I need. So if a charter guest works on board and they want me to call them by their first name, then I'll call them by their first name. But if they want me to call them by Lord or Lady, then I'll call them by Lord or Lady. You know,
yeah.
That's what we do. We are the pinnacle of service in the service yeah. industry. If you go to the very best hotel in the world and we're 30, 40% better than that, because that's what we do, you know, and that's the market that we're in. So anyway, and then he's tended to agree, and I think he's reassessed the way he looks at it now. But yeah, there you go.
Yeah, that's very true. Captains, just particularly what you were saying about guests as well, you really have to be quite a chameleon in terms of making yourself the image of what that particular person expects and wants. And for some people, it's informality that makes them feel comfortable. And for some people, it's the opposite. It just depends who you are, I suppose.
Yeah, I guess, you know, and an interesting thing is, and I use this all the time with the girls on board. It's like, if you're standing at the bar and you see someone do a little shiver, then don't say anything. Just walk inside, grab a throw or a wrap or whatever, and unfold it, walk around, and lay it across their shoulders. They'll think you're amazing, because you're seeing what they want before they realize what they want.
Yeah.
Or before they need it, you know, and that's the difference between an amazing charter boat and a charter boat. Knowing what the guest wants before they need it.
Sounds fantastic. Okay, well, I'm waiting for my invite, Dean. I'm free this summer, so
well,
see
actually,
you
know what? Yeah, for sure. We're going to do a broker's day. So you never know. We might get you to come out so that you can actually chat about it firsthand. You never know, Charlotte.
That'd be amazing. Thank you. Well, enjoy the rest of your holiday, Dean. Thank you so much. And good luck with the rest of the summer.
Thanks. Thanks a lot.
Thanks a lot. Bye-bye. Thank you for listening to this week's Big Boat Interview, which is mixed and produced by Grace Nielsen and is a production of Boat International Media. Don't forget to tune in on Friday for the next episode of Boat Briefing, where we bring you all the news from the world of superyachting. I'm sure we'll be discussing the winners of our World Superyacht Awards, which of course took place this weekend. In the meantime, don't forget to like and subscribe, and if you want to get in touch, do drop us a line. podcast@boatinternationalmedia.com is the address. Bye for now.